He said, listen, where have you seen accountability anywhere? When have we ever had accountability? The winner makes up the rules. There's no international law in that area anymore. I mean, why didn't Clinton, George Bush, the two George Bushes, Obama, Trump, why didn't they ever face a criminal court? They all committed war crimes. Tony Blair committed war crimes in Iraq. He walks around a free man. Julian Assange is in prison for exposing the war crimes that many of these people were involved in. So the person who tells the truth and exposes them is in prison, and the people who committed the war crimes walk free. We have a big problem. International law has broken down, and it started with the Americans refusing to recognize it anymore. Israel refuses to recognize it. And sadly, more and more, I see the European Union engaging in illegal sanctions and coming up with their own rules-based order instead of recognizing the UN Charter and the international law that was formed after 1945.
Mr. Wallace, thank you for your precious time and knowledge. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Sana Said, a US-based journalist, says a million children in Afghanistan may possibly die this winter as the US-imposed freeze on Afghan assets remains in place. She calls it barbaric. Afghan-American activist and mental health therapist Nahid Fatahi refers to the killing of 10 Afghan civilians, including 7 children, in a U.S. drone strike in Kabul to highlight U.S. war crimes in her home country. Rashida Yousafzai, an Afghan-Australian journalist, says women are forced to sell their children in Afghanistan as famine threatens the lives of 1 million children.
And that was our episode about Pakistan's economic crisis and IMF's ineffective programs, and also children paying the heavy cost of America's military adventures in Afghanistan. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take care.
In the limelight.
The International Criminal Court's decision to deprioritize a probe into crimes by the US and its allies came after years of US obstruction. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Alice Sperry, writer. This article is published under the heading How U.S. Derailed an Effort to Prosecute Its Crimes in Afghanistan. Stay tuned for more. The new chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, the only international body with the authority to prosecute individuals over genocide, crimes against humanity, and war crimes, has recently sought to reopen a previously suspended investigation in Afghanistan, but with a caveat. The probe would not include conduct by the United States and its allies, all of which have committed crimes that fall squarely with the court's jurisdiction. The court's prosecutor, Karim Khan, who has been on the job for just over 3 months, wrote in a statement that his office would focus exclusively on crimes committed by Taliban and Daesh. A preliminary investigation of crimes committed in Afghanistan since that country joined the court in 2003 had been underway for more than a decade, before a full investigation was authorized and then suspended in favor of an Afghanistan-led process. That investigation included crimes committed by all parties to the conflict, marking the first time the ICC probed crimes committed by U.S. forces, which in Afghanistan include extrajudicial killings, drone strikes that killed an untold number of civilians, and torture. Now, if a panel of ICC judges authorize the prosecutor's request, the resumed investigation would deprioritize other aspects of this investigation, Khan said, an implicit reference to the U.S. and its allies. The announcement dealt a blow to victims, human rights advocates, and those who had placed in the ICC their last hope to see the crimes committed by U.S. personnel and officials prosecuted in a court of law. While many Afghans welcomed the reopening of a case that they hope will preserve the international community's scrutiny of the newly installed Taliban government, they warned that the decision would threaten the credibility of a court that has long faced questions about its ability to take on the world's most powerful countries. The ICC has historically operated with limited resources, with an annual budget of roughly $172 million paid by its 123 members. In a world starved for justice and accountability, the ICC's resource problem has at times become a political one, raising questions about how the court prioritizes which cases to tackle. In recent years, the ICC has opened inquiries into potential crimes and Israeli regime crimes in Palestine, and it has opened and then shuttered preliminary inquiries into acts committed by British troops in Iraq. All have faced significant opposition. The U.S., which is not an ICC member, has also long taken a hostile stance toward the court, opposing investigations into its allies, including the Zionist regime, and fiercely contesting the court's jurisdiction over U.S. nationals. U.S. officials have put extensive pressure on the court, the Afghan government, and U.S. allies in an effort to derail any investigation of American crimes. Under ICC rules, the court can open an investigation if a member country requests it, if the United Nations Security Council refers the case, or if it believes that one of the crimes that fall under its jurisdiction were committed within the territory of a member state or by nationals of a member state operating in another country. It was under that third category that the court claimed authority over the conduct of U.S. nationals in Afghanistan, as well as in Romania, Lithuania, and Poland, where the CIA operated black sites. The prosecutors had opened to find a receptive partner in the administration of President Barack Obama, particularly as the American public had widely condemned the war on terror tactics of his predecessor. But U.S. officials unequivocally warned the court that opposition to the investigation of American crimes was bipartisan. With political opposition from the strongest party to the conflict, their preliminary inquiry in Afghanistan dragged along for a decade. In 2017, with President Donald Trump newly in office, Bensouda finally moved to formally request the court's permission to launch an official investigation. In 2019, the ICC's pretrial chamber, the body tasked with authorizing a formal investigation, denied such authorization, an unprecedented decision that cited, among other things, the political climate surrounding the probe. Trump's National Security Advisor, John Bolton, had been fiercely opposed to the ICC since his days in Bush administration, and he encouraged Trump to threaten ICC officials with sanctions and prosecution, as well as to revoke Bensouda's entry visa to the U.S. The prosecutor's team denounced the scare tactics and pressed forward, projecting, outwardly at least, a continuing willingness to take on the U.S. The court's investigation of U.S. acts had barely started, however, and political pressure on the ICC was threatening to thwart other aspects of the probe as well. ICC prosecutors and representatives of victims successfully appealed the denial from pre-trial chambers, and the ICC's appeals chambers authorized a formal investigation in Afghanistan on March 5, 2020. In response, the Trump administration issued an executive order condemning the ICC and imposed sanctions on Bensoudo and Mocho Choco, the first time the U.S. had ever taken such action against officials of an international body. Critics of the decision argued that deprioritizing U.S. and other foreign powers' crimes undermines the court's principle of impartiality and reveals a lack of understanding of the conditions that precipitated the collapse of the Afghan government in the first place. Liz Evenstone, an associate director of HRW's International Justice Program, who focuses on the ICC, noted that Khan's decision, one of his first official actions, reignites long-standing questions about how the court chooses to allocate its limited resources. The work that the ICC does has to be meaningful, she said. For it to be meaningful, it needs to resonate and relate to victims' experiences. It needs to be perceived as independent. It needs to be perceived as impartial. Before it was shelved, the ICC investigation into U.S. crimes in Afghanistan was expected to focus primarily on the torture program, which was much better documented than drone strikes and other crimes. Those would also fall under the ICC's jurisdiction, but it's unclear how closely the court was investigating them. Critics of the decision to scale back the probe have noted that by essentially enabling impunity for U.S. crimes, the court risks sending the message to dictators, autocrats, and even other powerful democracies that they may get away with them too. Even as the ICC's effort to reopen part of its Afghanistan investigation could lead to justice for some victims of Taliban and Daesh, it is leaving countless others behind. It is also denying Americans an opportunity to see their own government held accountable for the crimes it committed in their name. While a series of public inquiries have shed light on many of the abuses of the U.S. has carried out during its two-decade so-called war on terror, there have been no significant criminal or civil cases against those responsible. This is as much about the U.S. as it is about Afghanistan. It's about Afghan victims, but it's also about the U.S. military and its deep and systematic problems. Americans who care about the U.S. should care about this issue.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
فیلم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
فقه or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked in
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of عمل انسان بعد از ایمان.
Self-purification is the most significant factor.
امامت یک اصل زنده است در تاریخ اسلام.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
امام صادق فرمود کسی که وسواس داره پیرو شیطانه.
امام صادق علیه السلام in a hadith states, the obsessive person is a follower of Satan and is not among the wise ones. If we take a look at the time of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam and the Imams alayhi wasallam, we understand that they had not facilities like today. However, they were not obsessive, oversensitive about the purity of the things around. They believed in the original purity and validity of the things. In other words, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam and the other Imams alayhim assalam were cautious about their surroundings but not suspicious about them. Of course, not all doubts and presumptions are wrong. Even in the Holy Quran, it is stated that we must avoid all types of doubts or suspicions, even if some of them are true. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Food for thought. everyone, and here is an admonition worth pondering upon from the noblest lady of all times, Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. You, the servants of Allah, are the ones to maintain his injunctions and prohibitions, as the carriers of his religion and his revelation, and the propagators of his religion among other nations.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Serving customers in a high-tech way. That's what a traditional restaurant in the German state of Bavaria does. What's the goal? The owner explains.
We decided ourselves for this robot because of the lack of staff. Looked for support in a technological form. It's not a replacement, of course, but it's a relief for the waiters.
The robot is equipped with a trolley and it can easily move around in the restaurant. When it comes to saving time, the high-tech waiters is of great help, especially when the restaurant is packed with customers. The owner says most customers first become surprised when they come across the robot. He says waiters are still present to serve meals and receive orders. Butterfly gardens are a place where you can watch these tiny creatures and marvel at their beauty. But have you ever wondered where these butterflies come from? These colorful creatures are in fact bred in butterfly farms. And Donald Orsay from Costa Rica is one of the biggest breeders, making that the mission of his life. He produces somewhere around 2,500 pupas per week.
Arsay is one of the world's largest exporters of the popular Morpho species. Listen to him explain why he is fascinated by them.
A morpho has a great advantage. It is a butterfly that rarely stays still, unless it is very late, because when it is getting dark, it settles down, but normally it flies constantly. It flies by in the butterfly gardens.
Arsay's butterflies have their own special diet. They feed on bananas and a concoction that he keeps its ingredients secret. Morphos are popular because of their color. They are shimmering blue on one side and brown on the other side. That's perfect for camouflage. Butterflies are really fun to watch, but they serve a critical purpose as well. They help plants reproduce by pollination, thus strengthening the ecosystem.
A few hooks and a shelf have transformed a wall in the Swedish capital, Stockholm, into an outdoor charity. It's called the Wall of Kindness, which is painted with the slogan, "Grab a jacket if you need one, leave a jacket if you can spare one." Here, people can donate their winter clothes or warm boots if they have some extra. The Wall of Kindness is meant to help those in need, including the homeless, to stay warm. The wall was set up by a real estate company, and the organizer says people have responded positively with the high turnover. The move was inspired by a trend that has been seen in Iran over the years. Several other countries across the world, such as India, have also organized similar outdoor charities.
Scientists in Brazil have come up with a creative way to shore up the population of a majestic species of monkeys in danger of extinction. Brazilian conservationists have constructed a bridge to reconnect the two sides of Rio de Janeiro's Atlantic forest. The road had effectively isolated a group of lion tamarins, but now it offers hope for the endangered monkey. There are only 2,500 golden tamarins left in the wild, all of them in Brazil. It is estimated that these animals have lost more than 95% of their habitat.
Childhood joy and lightness meet with art at the First of Its Kind Museum in Rome, Italy. Here, all kinds of art decorations are made of balloons. The exhibit, dubbed Let's Fly, displays a broad range of interactive artworks. In one installation, visitors are invited to find their inner child by diving into a pool of hundreds of small balloons. In another section, giant inflatable sculptures double as a playground for kids. Some installations move only by riding a bicycle. The museum is a place where artists and spectators coexist for a journey into a world of inflatable art capable of freeing the imagination of all ages.
It's the combination of art with childhood and adolescence that makes this place so magical. So they are art installations, but also games. The blurred line between the two is what makes the museum so unique.
The balloon exhibit incorporates innovative works created by 14 different artists from across Europe. The artifacts were created using hundreds of thousands of biodegradable balloons. The organizers say they want to increase environmental awareness by being eco-friendly, as all the artworks will be reused or recycled. The exhibit will run until March the 5th.
As people around the globe are preparing for the New Year holidays, the Vatican lights up a Christmas tree and nativity scene set up on St. Peter's Square. People gathered around the square waiting for long hours to see the illumination. Even heavy rain did not stop them. That's while the official lighting ceremony was held inside the Paul VI Hall, where Pope Francis presides his weekly audiences. The nativity scene, made of more than 30 pieces, is created by Peruvian artists. The majestic Christmas tree is about 28 meters and comes from Andalo, northern Italy. The locals see the Starling tree as a symbol of hope and peace. The tree will be switched on every night until January the 6th. Chinese students receive a science lesson on their country's space station, and they are lucky enough to receive it firsthand from the astronauts living in the first and core module of the station. The class was held via a live broadcast shown on the state television. The three astronauts gave a lecture that focused on physics. They explained how the weightlessness environment affects the movement of objects. The astronauts also gave a tour of the station they arrived at in October for a six-month stay. It seems that their teachings were quite motivating. The students peppered their instructors with questions, including those about living conditions in space. China launched its space station in April and plans to complete it by the end of the next year.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Christmas is just around the corner, and children are waiting for their presents. In Guatemala, Santa Claus has a new mode of transport to give gifts to children with cancer.
Today, as in the past year, we are celebrating Christmas with the cancer patients of the shelter. Santa Claus came in a helicopter to give presents to the children. It is very emotional for the children. The majority of them have never been so close to a helicopter, let alone Santa Claus.
That was an exciting experience for the children. The charity event was organized by an institute that supports cancer patients for remote areas in Guatemala. The institute says the event aimed to help the children go through their therapies with more ease. The Amazon River turtles are in danger of extinction, but environmentalists have come up with an initiative to save their lives. And that's by protecting their eggs. Climate change and human activities against their ecosystem have been putting these creatures at risk. Now, what the biologists and local volunteers do is that they recover the turtle nests from riverbanks during the rainy season to protect them from drowning. Then they take care of the baby turtles until they develop a hard shell and are ready to start their life journey. Batches of tiny turtles release into a river in the Amazon border between Bolivia and Brazil. They are now grown enough to protect themselves against different threats. Environmentalists have been doing this for more than 20 years, saving millions of baby turtles. This time they released 1 million of the little turtles. During the Christmas season, people around the world love to add a dose of joy in the form of Santas. Children especially feel ecstatic to see Santas distributing presents and snacks. But you will be amazed to see how one Santa this time dives into water to give well-behaved sharks and fishes their goodies. In Malta's National Aquarium, Scuba Claus, helped by an elf, plunges into a huge fish tank with his sack of treats to feed sharks and fishes. Santas ho 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 come out in bubble from through his snorkel over his white beard. The aquarium, located in the northern part of the island, hosts more than 175 different species of various marine animals.
Butterflies are probably the most popular among all insect species on Earth due to their beauty and color. Millions of monarch butterflies have flocked to a Mexican forest, creating a magical sight, drawing tourists, scientists, and locals there. The monarch butterflies flee the cold winters of Canada and northern United States and travel thousands of kilometers to hibernate and reproduce in the temperate woods of central Mexico. Hundreds of trees crowded with butterflies can be seen along Mexico's 13,000-hectare monarch reserve after their long journey. However, experts warn of a drop in the number of the species. Climate change is reported to have had an impact on their butterflies' migration pattern, as well as a reduction in their milkweed breeding habitat in the United States.
With the Christmas season in full swing, hundreds have gathered on Spain's Gran Canaria island to watch stunning sand sculptures representing the birth of Christ. Eight sand artists from around the world have created the spectacular figures. It took them a week to complete the scenes. A huge sand wall is built around the sculptures to protect them. The island has been holding the event every year since 2006. The warm temperatures on the Spanish beach have helped attract a lot of visitors over Christmas. According to the organizers, at least 200,000 people have visited the exhibition in the past 15 years. A joyful day at an Australian zoo as a baby pygmy hippo is born. That's good news for the zoo staff because pygmy hippos are endangered species. Cambiri, the mother hippo, gave birth to the calf last month. It's her second calf, and the first one was born in a Sydney zoo 4 years ago. The newborn is yet to be named. It sticks to the mum and follows her wherever she goes. The calf is spending most of its time out of the sight of the public, as for now it's learning to walk and swim. And the mum keeps a close eye on the calf at all times.
The first few days, she did not leave the calf's side. Was very sedate, very quiet, and just looking after its every need. And only in the last sort of couple of days has she started to get a little bit more sleep in.
They are regarded as endangered animals because of illegal hunting and loss of habitat. Currently, less than 3,000 pygmy hippos are living in the wild.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture, it reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university official spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Rabbitu billahi rabba wa bil islami deena.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, salam to all of you. So welcome to today's special from IRIB English Radio. We're going to speak about hypocrisy in Islam. So join us.
Without your warmth, without your smile, without you by my side, the world was so cold, I felt so lost. Without your light, I felt so blind.
Today, Monday, is the 15th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 29th of the month of Azar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 20th of December, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's bless this moment of today's special by recitation of chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 10. We'll listen to it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. في قلوبهم مرض فزادهم الله مرضا ولهم عذاب أليم بما كانوا يكذبون.
In their hearts is disease, so Allah has increased their disease. And for them is a painful punishment because they habitually used to lie.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
If a person is a believing one, his entire being cries faith and indicates his inviction. And if he goes astray, his deviation is revealed both outwardly and inwardly. The similarity of spirit and body possessed by the hypocrite is a new additional disease. It is a sort of contradiction and duplicity or cleft that governs over the self of a man. Hence, in the regularity of creation, everybody who chooses a path and equips himself with the necessary means to pave it would go forth on that very path. Dear friend, hypocrisy in Islam is the topic of this program. Today's a special from IRIB English Radio. A believer is not a believer until he completely brings himself to accept Allah, the Almighty, the only Allah and Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, his last prophet. But the hypocrite's continuous disbelief on Allah will take them to hellfire. The hypocrites, in front of Muslims, give their loyalty and obedience to Allah only but when they are alone. With their hypocrite companions, they mock the most merciful one and his prophet and his followers. They think they are deceiving Allah, whereas they are the ones getting deceived. Allah has made the believers peace-loving and faithful to his deen, their religion. A group of people known as hypocrites has been described as the most dangerous enemy of Islam and Muslims. They are the ones that create chaos and mischief on earth through their hypocritical nature. They sow doubts in the hearts of the believers by speaking about the religion negatively in a persuasive manner.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with the problem of hypocrisy. We find that those people who pretended to be believers, but in fact, they were not, as believers as they claimed, they harmed the Islamic history, Islamic teachings, and the whole course of Islamic civilization, generally speaking. They have harmed the course of Islamic civilization much more than the harms received from non-Muslims and polytheists. Because when a person is a polytheist, because when someone doesn't believe in the Islamic religion and comes to you, you understand that, okay? You know that, okay? This person doesn't believe in the Islamic religion. So I know what to do with him, and I know on which basis do I have to talk with him? How should I approach him? Okay, how should I answer his or her questions and so on? Or when someone believes in another religion, for example, when someone is Christian, is Jews or Assyrian or Buddhist or any other religion, you know that, well, he or she does have a certain religious basis or religious background. So when you want to approach him or her or answer him or her, and transactions and so on, okay, you know that, okay, that person isn't Muslim. For example, let's say he's a Christian, or for example, he's a Jew. Okay, no problem, okay, it's up to him or her, okay, whichever religion he or she may prefer to have, okay. On the other hand, I do know that I'm a true Muslim, I'm a Muslim, and I have, a certain set of duties and obligations to consider in approaching, in transacting with other people. But when someone pretends to be a Muslim, but in fact he isn't a Muslim, not only is he an indifferent person, but also he's very much active on the opposite line, on the opposite front, okay? And this happened in the early Islamic history.
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
At this time, let's speak about characteristics of a hypocrite. A hypocrite is a dangerous friend than a disbeliever enemy, as he masks his hypocrisy with a false loyalty and mere words. The intentions of a hypocrite are unclear to the believers, and they're played by them due to their eloquent speech and outward display of fidelity. The Prophet Muhammad had mentioned the four characteristics of a hypocrite, and whoever has them is one of them. If a person has some element of these characteristics, he's also one of them, unless he repents and gets rid of them. The first characteristics is when he speaks, he lies. The second one is when he makes a promise, he breaks it. Number three, when he's trusted, he betrays people. And number four, when he quarrels, he uses obscene speech. One question, and its answer, of course, how to cure hypocrisy in Islam. Dear friend, try to find out why it is that you lie. Is it because you are afraid of displeasing people? Are you unable to say no to someone when they request you to do something? Or do you lie in order to appear to be better than you really are? If you lie because you are too afraid to offend people or to face confrontational and challenging situations, then you'll need to build up your self-esteem and your self-confidence. This will require long-term efforts, but you can start by reading books in the self-help genre and attending short self-help courses and workshops to change the way you view yourself. If you tell lies because it's a family habit, because in some families, unfortunately, lying is the norm, then you need to work on your family, too. You need to remind them that lying is a sin and that it brings nothing but loss and self-destruction in both this life and the next.
Hypocrisy is a spiritual illness that sits in the heart. It is an extremely dangerous spiritual illness. What is hypocrisy exactly? Hypocrisy is to believe in one thing but express another. To have one emotion but to express another emotion. You might dislike someone in your heart, but you express friendliness to that person. This is a form of hypocrisy. Someone who pretends to like you while they actually hate you and despise you, this person is called a hypocrite. This person is called two-faced. Many people can be hypocrites if it is in their best interest to express feelings that they don't actually have. They will become hypocrites. Your employee might be a hypocrite. Deep down inside, that employee actually hates you, but they smile in your face and they flatter you and they tell you words that you want to hear. This is being hypocritical. Many people could be hypocrites. Some friends can be hypocrites. They flatter you. They tell you things that make you happy, but deep down inside, they hold resentment against you. They hold a grudge and hatred against you. These people are hypocrites, and we tend to call hypocrites snakes. Why snakes? Because a snake feels good to hold, but as soon as you touch, it snaps back at you and gives you a poisonous bite.
Dear brothers and sisters, that was all for today's special. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this interesting topic, hypocrisy in Islam, on the next episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Till another visiting, thank you very much, and we leave you in Allah's blessings. Have a nice time.
They told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for? Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes, I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.